Sorry, Tana says, touching my arm. I'm bloody starving. I'll meet you for breakfast in a few, yeah? Tana takes off and breezes past Vivienne into the tower. I hurry up the stairs after her. Vivienne tuts and opens the door, and we cross into a vaulted stone hall. Candles and sconces illuminate the stone walls and arched ceiling. Raphael peers into an office by the doorway, one crammed with books and papers and a burning fireplace. A man with a long brown beard sits at a desk. He's wearing a dark blue suit and something around his neck that looks like a silver collar with an opening at the front. Ah, he peers at Raphael over his glasses.
Who have you brought with you, Raphael?
His booming voice echoes in the corridor. This man could be an opera singer. I'm just relieved that everyone is speaking in English and not Fae, since my accent is apparently terrible. A new recruit. Raphael glances at me for a fraction of a second.
She's going to work with us.
The man pulls out a large silver ring made of twisted metal, like the one he's wearing, and hands it to Vivienne. She slides it around her neck. Thanks, she says. I'm going to get out of these filthy clothes. I stare after her. That's exactly what I want to do. Bathe, change, sleep for 10 hours. But I'm still here with Raphael. When I turn back to him, I see that he's wearing a similar collar, only in gold.
Did you find the fugitives?
The bearded man asks.
Most of them,
says Raphael.
But they said their contact wasn't waiting for them. Amon, do you have any idea what happened? Their contact, Leia, was supposed to... She's dead,
Amon said.
The Fae forces caught her. And Alex. And Rain.
Silence stretches out. Then Raphael whispers,
Damn. We lost 3 crew members to a sea serpent attack.
He runs a hand through his hair.
The Fae must have found out about the exfiltration op. It's a terrible loss,
Amon says heavily.
But worst of all is Alex. Without her, we're down to 1 sentinel. MI-13 can't function with only 1.
Raphael levels his pale gaze on me, the torchlight gilding his beautiful features.
That's where she comes in.
Ah, there it is. That note of disdain again, like he resents everything about this. I wave and smile at Amon.
Nia was simply on holiday in France.
Raphael goes on, talking about me as if I'm not there.
She brought the fugitives to us by hiding them in the veil. It turns out she's a sentinel, and she has no idea. She apparently didn't even know she's demi-fae.
Amon's eyes widen.
The gods must have sent you to us.
A wave of dizziness washes over me, and I lean against a cold stone wall. At your service.
Well, for heaven's sake,
Amon huffs.
Get her something to eat before she faints in the entryway. Don't you travel with snacks, Raphael?
Raphael points to the end of the long hall.
You can get breakfast. Head down this hall and take the stairs on the right. I need to debrief Amon.
My eyebrows rise. I'm allowed to wander around a spy academy by myself? Just stroll in and get breakfast?
8 guards already saw you walk in with me,
Raphael replies.
One of them, a telepath. If you weren't supposed to be here, you'd already be dead.
Chapter 8. My gaze roams over the gothic ceiling as I walk. This place looks like a grandiose version of Oxford or Westminster, with soaring arches and ornate carvings from centuries ago. It's like a medieval monastery on a scale fit for gods. In any case, it's intimidating. And with every step, I feel even more certain that I don't belong here. Someone like you. I notice a bathroom door by a staircase and slip inside. A mirror hangs over a porcelain sink, and I stare at myself. My black hair is a mess, and I try to smooth it down, then knot it into a bun. I take a bit of time to just breathe, inhaling the woodsy scent of the mahogany walls. Then, as ready as I can be in a dress stiff with seawater and stained by serpent blood, I exit and walk up a narrow, spiraling set of stairs. The steps are wildly uneven, and if I remember anything from my history classes, it's a trick they used in the old days to trip up invading forces. At the top of the stairs, I turn right through an arched doorway into the dining hall and hesitate.
realizing that I'm completely underdressed in my mud-smeared, blood-stained white sundress. Almost all the women present sport ethereal gossamer gowns, elegant garments that display their perfect bodies to advantage. The men are a bit more casual in button-down shirts and trousers that show off their athletic forms. Holy crap! Everyone here is gorgeous. Many of them wear metallic neck rings, most copper and bronze, but some silver. Torx, I think they're called. It takes me a moment to realize the diners are mostly grouped at separate tables by color. Bronze, copper, and silver. My gaze sweeps around the room. The occupants are garbed in a rainbow of stunning colors. Sky blue, indigo, cerulean, and emerald. And they sit at tables laden with great platters of fruit and baked goods. Bright murals line the walls of the dining hall, and at the far end of the chamber are 12-foot-high portraits of a man and woman with gleaming blonde hair. They're dressed in rich blue fabric and wear golden crowns. Arthur and Guinevere, I presume. Sunlight streams in through long windows. Washed in the morning light, richly dressed and confident, everyone in this room looks like royalty. I glance down at myself. My dress is tattered and bloodstained. My cheap handbag is smeared with mud, and I'm wearing dollar store plastic sandals. The hall falls silent as the others notice, and within moments, all eyes are on me. I swallow hard and step inside. Never in history have plastic sandals sounded so loud, echoing off the high ceilings as I walk across the wood floor. Deafening. Why is everyone staring? Why are they all listening so intently to my sandals squeak? A young woman at the silver table eyes me, then leans over and whispers something to her friend. The other woman lets out a small laugh, and for a moment, I'm back at my 15-year-old birthday party all over again, watching the cool girls laugh at my drunk mom. But I'm not 15 anymore, and whether or not these fuckers know it, they actually need me here. At least, Raphael seems to think so. I raise my chin and scan the room. Someone is waving at me, and my chest unclenches when I recognize Tana in the back. Even after the trials of our journey, she looks fresh somehow, her yellow dress pristine. I walk over to her through a narrow gap between seated cadets, brushing against a few of them as I walk. As I do, more people start whispering and muttering to each other, and I hear snippets of their discussions. Heard she talked to herself during the entire trip, a woman says as I go by. Tried to kill a sea serpent with a distress crystal, I hear another one say.
Threatened to call the military to blow up the mission,
a man in green says and sniffs. A loud, vehement voice in my head joins in. You don't belong here, it chides. You're weak, a risk. You need to leave, leave, leave. I stumble, swallowing the urge to retort aloud. I grit my teeth and keep going. Apparently, word has gotten out about our misadventures. That was fast. Whoever talked didn't paint me in a very flattering light. I circle the table and sit across from Tana. At this table, no one is wearing a torque.
Nia, so glad you're joining us.
Tana grins at me. The sunlight catches her hoop earrings. She gestures at the girl to my left.
This is Serana.
Nice to meet you, Nia.
Serana smiles at me. There's something wild in her smile, half joyous, half predatory.
Even sitting, she's one of the tallest women I've ever seen, and her red hair drapes down her back. She has an eerie beauty, with pale white skin and a smattering of freckles across her cheeks. Her bright green eyes mark her as unmistakably demi-fae. She gives me a single nod of approval. Tana told me about what happened on the boat. Fair play. Very gutsy move, that one with the crystal. She drums her fingernails on the table. She's wearing chipped black nail polish. Oh, I clear my throat. I got the impression that people here don't think that. She waves her knife in a circular motion, the blade nearly nicking the ear of the guy on her other side. Bunch of wankers. They don't like strangers.
And I'm Tarquin,
the guy to my right interjects.
He has a long bony nose and nostrils that seem to stay flared.
Tarquin Pendragon.
He looks at me expectantly. He has smooth auburn hair, combed neatly sideways, and thin lips pressed into a tight smile. Very nice to meet you, I offer. He clears his throat.
You know of Arthur Pendragon, I presume? King Arthur of the Round Table?
He points at the towering portraits.
That's him in Queen Guinevere. I'm the spit of him, they say. The absolute spit of him.
He looks nothing like the chisel-jawed tan man in the portrait. Tarquin's skin is the color of milk. Quite.
He grins uncertainly.
Yes, Arthur founded this place and built most of Camelot. His blood runs in my veins.
I see. You're a descendant of Arthur? I can see he wants recognition for this. Very impressive.
His grin fades.
Yes, well, I'm descended from his sister Morgaze.
His expression brightens.
But some say the Pendragons in those days had incestuous relationships, so really I could be.
He clears his throat.
Anyway, since you're new here, I can show you around. As a Pendragon, I feel it's my duty to look after lost young women who are new to our academy. Of course, I can show you around the rest of Camelot, too, outside the tower. I've lived in the city my whole life.
There's something false about his smile that sets my teeth on edge, but I murmur, "Thank you." So he's one of those Pendragons that Vivienne referenced, someone who might cut me down just weeks into training. But he doesn't seem to hate me so far. My stomach rumbles and I turn to a platter of food. It looks like something from a fairy tale. Fresh bread pudding, jams, fruit, cakes decorated with dandelions, entire baked salmon and potatoes all resting on a bed of wildflowers. Teapots stand on the table along with a golden liquid that might be beer or whiskey. I immediately grab a small dandelion cake, then a piece of salmon and a potato, then bread and blue cheese, and dive in. It's possibly the weirdest and most delicious meal I've ever eaten. As I eat a buttery potato, I pour myself a cup of tea. "This is incredible," I mutter. "Salmon for breakfast? Is this some sort of celebration?" Serana's eyebrows raise. "Celebration?"
"It's Nia's birthday," Tana says. "So we are celebrating."
"Is it really?" Serana says. "Happy birthday." "My birthday was actually yesterday." I frown. "I mean, is the breakfast always like this?"
Serana nods.
"It's just breakfast, love. But it's fey breakfast."
"Marvelous." My gaze flicks around the room. "Why exactly? Are many of the demi-fey here from the fey realm?"
"No," says Tana. "Most of us aren't. And that's exactly why we do it. I mean, for one thing, most of the people here are human, like Tarquin."
Tarquin snorts.
"Not exactly like me, but yes, same species.
But even most of the demi-fey have never lived in the fey realm. And that's why all this is part of the training," Serana says. "Most of us didn't grow up in the fey culture. We've always hidden among humans."
"I see." "These meals and the clothing are very important," says Tana. 4 years ago, we had 2 undercover agents in the Fey Realm. They had a good cover and perfect disguises. It should have been an easy mission."
"They were demi-fey, but raised in England," Serana adds. "One fellow buttoned his shirt all the way up, and the girl wasn't used to wearing all the sheer dresses, so she had a jacket over it. It didn't take long before they attracted the unwanted attention of a bastard Fey soldier. He followed them around, and then he noticed that they refused mead in the morning. And that's the thing, isn't it? Fey always have a glass of mead with breakfast. And one at dinner."
Tana picks up the bottle of mead and pours it into a small glass. It sparkles amber in the sunlight.
"The 2 spies were captured, tortured and executed," Tana says, her voice soft.
She hands me the little glass.
"Drink."
"Alcohol in the morning? Mom would fit right in then." I take a sip and wince. "I never drink alcohol, and this tastes too strong and too sweet." Serana grimaces at me. "You'll need to get over making that face. That's exactly why they decided to incorporate the food and the clothing into the academy." She spears a piece of salmon with her fork. "But it's not exactly a hardship. Our cooks are from the Fey Realm. They're brilliant."
"I've been training since I was a little boy in Camelot," Tarquin says. "My dad realized that we'd have to get acclimated to the Fey culture thoroughly in order to carry on the family tradition, even if it's not in our nature to act like the wild beasts of the Fey world. But a hunter must understand its prey, yes? Like wearing antlers and the scent of musk to hunt a stag. It's common sense, really. If those 2 demi-fey agents had done the same, they'd still be alive instead of slaughtered like pigs."
"That's right,"
a large guy sitting next to him says around a mouthful of food.
"You're totally right."
A piece of meat spatters from his mouth into his mug, but he doesn't seem to notice or care. What exactly is your family tradition? I ask. How is this related to King Arthur? Tarquin shrugs.
The Pendragons destroyed the bitch Queen Morgan. We had to. Her son tried to kill everyone in Camelot, you know. And the Fae kept shooting our soldiers with their arrows. Morgan sent her son to murder Arthur out of sheer bloodthirsty rage. Barbaric. Pendragon's strength rid Camelot of that scourge. Arthur and his knights had it all in control back in those days. And now, we've gone soft. That's why I think Avalon Tower should be focusing on ancient Camelot families with heritage and means, with the strength of character to fight them, like we did before.
He sips his mead.
Of course, I'm not saying you all don't belong here, but people need to know their role. Do you understand what I'm saying, Nia? They say you're a sentinel, so I guess you'll do your part by getting teams across the Vale. I think it's commendable of you to volunteer, knowing as little as you do. But you'll need someone from the knight class to command you, particularly one with a gold talk. We can't expect every American off the street to make the decisions of a knight, or even a squire.
He laughs at the concept, and for the first time, I think I see a genuine smile. The knights, I assume, are all nobles like him. Of course, I say, sipping the mead. It's growing on me. I don't have the right breeding for complex thinking.
Exactly, you get it. We all have to do our part.
Tarquin clears his throat.
We always manage to get gold,
he blurts.
The Pendragons, he adds. We're the only ones who score high enough to get gold.
What do you mean? I ask. Serana sighs loudly. We'll all be tested in a few months. It's called the culling because half the class will get kicked out. Sometimes people get hurt, even die. For the humans like Tarquin, they'll be tested on languages, spy skills, things like that. We do the same tests, but we also have to demonstrate magic. Those who pass the culling are all ranked according to our levels. And that's where the Torques come from? I ask. Tarquin nods.
The gold classes have their own dining hall. They're all knights. So in a while, I'm afraid I won't be able to eat with you anymore. This is the hall for the squires and the silver knights, the men-at-arms and the cadets.
He wrinkles his nose apologetically. I raise an eyebrow. So Raphael is a Pendragon? Tarquin's cheeks go red.
No,
he says sharply.
He's demi-fae. Of course he's not a Pendragon. Well, we were the only ones to get gold until he came along. Anyway, someone like you may need a more experienced hand to guide you.
His friend leans over, grinning.
And his hands are very experienced.
Fascinating, you two. Really fascinating history, Serana says. The way she smiles at him makes me draw away. She's like a cat grinning at her prey. Her strings of metal necklaces gleam in the rays of light.
Fucking inspiring.
But Tarquin is refilling his mead, looking as if his point has been made. I try some bread with a slice of blue-veined cheese. Oh, gods, the food. It's one of the most amazing things I've ever eaten, and for a few seconds, I can't focus on anything but the flavors in my mouth. I shut my eyes, chewing blissfully. I know, right? Tana says, her voice seeming to come from far away. It makes me want to go back to the Fae Realm, apart from all the murder.
This is actually subpar in comparison to the food I have at home,
Tarquin says. Everyone ignores him. Did you try this cheese? I ask Tana. She shudders. I can't eat cheese. Sometimes I glimpse dark visions of the future in it. I don't like that. We all know what that's like. Serana nods sagely. It's a problem. Tana sighs. I'd be eating a fine French cheese and suddenly I'd see a broken heart in it, or a flood. You can't enjoy cheese if it has a flood in it. I usually take mine with a bit of strong mustard, Serana says. So, you don't eat any cheese? Ever? I ask. I can have butter, Tana says. Her expression is deadly serious. Butter transcends time. I think we can all agree on that, I say. Nia, says Serana, will you join the rest of us in our classes? We only just started.
Why would she need to go to our classes?
Tarquin asks sharply.
She's not going to be in MI-13. She won't be a real agent of Camelot with a talk. She's just getting the real agents in and out. Like a taxi driver. Transportation.
My head throbs. I think Raphael wants me to have some basic skills.
Well, you'll find it very difficult.
Tarquin says.
I mean, I grew up in Camelot, and I trained to go to this academy for years. There are feeder schools to prepare us. What have you done these past years?
I work in a bookstore, I say.
A store?
He sounds scandalized.
Right. What, like, you stand at the till and take people's money and give them change? Coins and that sort of thing.
Have you never been in a shop before? I ask.
Not really.
His eyebrows are near his hairline.
And I've certainly never had breakfast with someone who worked in one. We have all sorts here now, don't we? Interesting times. Stay with me, and I'll help you get through those classes, because they are quite complicated.
His thigh is a little too close to mine.
Oh dear, you're using the wrong fork right now.
Honestly, his friend adds, aghast. Tarquin points.
That's a salad fork, and we don't change hands with the forks and knives here. That's out of the question. Listen, they usually get rid of people who can't keep up or who make buffoonish mistakes, but the Pendragon family is very well integrated here. My father is on the board, and my uncle is a professor.
I inch away. That's nice of you to offer, but I think I'll be fine. I've never had a problem with learning from books. He leans in closer, and the muscles around his mouth tighten.
This place can get really overwhelming, especially if you aren't cut from the same cloth. But you seem like you might have some hidden potential, and I could help you bring it out. I could tutor you in my room. I have a legacy room in the Green Knight Tower.
His arm brushes against mine. Aren't you lucky? I say, my tone flat.
Just tell him what you actually think, Nia,
Serana snaps. Here, let me show you how it's done. She leans over and slams her knife down into the table. The blade thunks into the wood, half an inch deep, between me and Tarquin. It wobbles, staying deeply lodged in the oak. She's not fucking interested, Tarquin, she says. She's going to sleep with you for favours. Tarquin's eyes widen.
Are you implying that's what I was asking for? I was merely being chivalrous. We've all heard about her screaming at imaginary people, so I figured I could offer her a hand.
He turns to me, narrowing his green eyes.
But obviously you're not interested in the help of a gentleman.
His jaw works.
Good luck with some of the other men here if you think I'm not good enough for you. Did you really think I was trying it on? I have much better offers than someone who works in a shop.
The guy next to him leans forward.
She's a septic. It's rhyming slang from London, you know. Septic tank rhymes with yank. Septic,
Tarquin repeats acidly. He stands abruptly and throws his napkin down, then marches away from the table. Tarquin's friend blinks, staring slowly around him as if he's not sure how to react. Then he gets up and hurries after his friend. Right. Now Tarquin hates me. I haven't had enough sleep for this. So they'll be the Pendragons Vivienne mentioned when she said she hoped they'd cut me down fast. Did she really say that? Asks Tana. They're all absolute tosses. Serana glowers after the retreating men. Tarquin and most of the gold talks are an insufferable bunch of twats, but they can't be avoided in this place, nor can Vivienne. The thing is, Tarquin and his lot don't even deserve the gold. It's just that the people in charge of Avalon Tower make sure the Pendragon family stays happy. The Pendragons think they run Camelot.
But they're destined for mediocrity, Tana says with a sigh.
I raise my eyebrow. Did you see that in your cards or something?
No, Tana shrugs. They're just absolute bellends.
Serana looks me over and frowns. Look at the state of you. Finish your food. We need to get you some proper fey clothes. Chapter 9. Serana leads me through a maze of interconnecting halls, our footsteps echoing around us. Avalon Tower is even larger than I'd first thought, and it's hard to keep track of where we are. Serana's legs are much longer than mine, and I struggle to keep up as we climb four flights of crooked, winding stairs. On the top floor, rib-vaulted arches stretch high above us. Diamond-paned windows overlook the courtyard, where wildflowers grow among the tall grasses and apple trees. I turn to look at some of the paintings on the wall. They're mostly portraits, though some depict ancient battles or mysterious castles. One of the portraits sends a ripple of dread up my neck. A towering fey man, dressed in black, is running his sword through the body of a naked woman. The corpses of more women lay strewn over the grass by his feet. I stare at it, catching my breath. The man wears a dark, spiky-looking crown and a cruel smile on his lips.
That's a bold choice for a decorative image. Serana turns to look at me.
Ah, that sadistic bastard is Mordred Kingslayer. He was an evil fae from thousands of years ago. The one Tarquin was talking about who killed Arthur. Back then, the fae had real primal magic. Even some of the twisted ones like him. He broke in here one night and murdered King Arthur, along with hundreds of innocent people. He's dead now. But guess who that fucker's son is?
I stare at her.
Oberon? The very one. They're descended from Queen Morgan. They say the House of Morgan will burn Camelot to ash. That's Oberon and his son, the prince. Let's hope that particular prophecy is wrong.
I pull my gaze from the disturbing image. There's still at least one more set of stairs to climb into a tower. My lungs rattle when I breathe.
What do you think of Vivienne? I ask through labored breaths. I'm afraid I've made an enemy of her.
Serana glances back at me.
The Silver Queen? I think she's probably fucking terrifying to have as an enemy. A real piece of work, you know.
Great.
If I were you, I'd try to avoid her as much as possible. Though you'll meet her again soon enough, no matter what you do. She teaches combat. But there are plenty of other classes. You've only missed a few weeks.
How long does it go on for?
I wheeze. Training for an agent? It used to be for a year, then the culling. Maybe a year or two to specialise.
My heart skips a beat.
A year? I can't leave Mom on her own for a year. Can I?
I know. She sighs. Not nearly enough, is it?
And it's even worse now. We've lost a lot of people in the field, so they want to start active missions in just 6 months. People are barely ready at 6 months, but that's when they'll test us.
My head is still reeling. I can't imagine I could actually pass the culling, and Mom would lose it if I don't return. But who needs me more? My adult mother? Or the fugitives hunted by a maniacal king? I still have a million more questions.
Serana, Tarquin said his family has prepared him for this day since he was born.
Tarquin is an egregious twat.
Her words echo off the stone stairwell. Right to the point.
Sure, but it's wild to me that he grew up with all this. Learning to fight the Fae before the rest of the world even knew they existed. And this whole place, how long exactly has it been here?
She stops on the stairs and turns to look at me.
Ages? It started with the Roman invasion. Have you ever heard of the Ninth Legion?
I frown.
I'm not up to speed on my Roman invasion trivia.
Basically, an entire legion disappeared in Britain, up by Scotland. That was the Fae, trapping them in trees and stones. Some soldiers were taken captive and dragged into Avalon to toil for Queen Morgan. But a few survived. They made it their mission to understand the Fae, to get their friends back.
I touch the wall's bricks, thinking of those loyal soldiers trying to recover their friends more than 2 millennia ago.
That's how this place started, I guess.
Serana continues. As a place to figure out the weaknesses of the Fae. They never found their men, though.
Oh, I say heavily. I suspect that's how the first Dimmy Fae turned up. Children of those early soldiers in the Fae. Anyway, in time, relationships between Fae and humans became peaceful. Avalon Tower even invited some of the Fae here, like Merlin, obviously.
Merlin was Fae?
Of course. Humans have no magic, and he was one of the most powerful magicians ever.
But things changed, right? You said that this guy killed King Arthur?
I point at Mordred's painting.
Yeah, exactly. He was sent by Morgan. After that, Fae and humans became mortal enemies. For centuries, Dimmy Fae like us were not allowed in Avalon Tower. Not until recently. Now they're desperate enough to take us in.
I stare at her, and the words like us roll around in my mind.
I never knew I was Dimmy Fae. Not until yesterday. I'm still not convinced, to be honest.
She shrugs. Like I said, humans have no magic, so you must be Dimmy Fae.
The world feels unsteady beneath my feet as I follow her further up the stairs. Just a week ago, I was ordinary little Nia, quietly shelving books in a shop. And I can't quite escape the feeling that perhaps all of this is a mistake, that I'm in over my head and don't belong. My lungs shriek and my airways narrow. I reach into my satchel, pull out my inhaler, and take 2 puffs. This thing is nearly empty. Serana watches me shove it back into my bag.
Asthma?
I thought it might be better by the seaside.
Does the sea air really work?
I consider that for a moment.
Not really.
Right. Anyway, let's get you dressed. The stairwell opens up to a landing, and she stops before a large oak door.
Where are we?
Instead of replying, she knocks. When there's no answer, she knocks again. "This is the wardrobe?" I ask.
"Who is it?"
A deep voice pierces the oak.
"It's Serana and the recruit. She has no proper clothes."
For some reason, I wasn't expecting a man to oversee the wardrobe, but maybe I needed to re-examine my assumptions.
"Give us a minute," a woman's voice this time.
I feel as if I'm interrupting something, and Serana turns to me, raising an eyebrow. At last, the door opens, and a woman crosses out, the door slamming shut behind her. She's tall, with platinum hair, sun-kissed skin, and a golden torque. She's exquisitely dressed in a sheer silvery gown and diamond jewelry. As her gaze sweeps up and down my body, her lip curls and her nose wrinkles.
"Oh, dear."
Then she walks past us, her hips swaying.
"Ignore her," whispers Serana. "Her name is Geneva, and she's a Pendragon agent from MI-13. Direct descendant of Arthur and Guinevere. Awful snob."
The door creaks open, and Raphael is standing there, looking stunningly, frustratingly hot. I'm utterly unsurprised that he was spending his time with someone described as an awful snob. But I'm also unable to stop staring at him. Towering windows let in morning light behind him, gilding his body, illuminating the dark waves of his hair. He isn't wearing a shirt, and my gaze lingers over his carved V-line, his thickly corded muscles, the whispers of shadow against tanned skin. Gods, what would it feel like to be pinned against the wall by this warrior's body? Geneva probably knows. My fingers curl into fists, and I pierce my palms with my nails. Remember, Nia, he's an absolute dick. But also, I shouldn't think of the word dick while I'm staring at his absolutely godlike bare chest. I raise my eyes instead to his golden torque.
"Mr. Lancelot," says Serana, "your new cadet needs clothing for her training."
Her tone is suddenly a lot more clipped, respectful. His gaze cuts from Serana down to me.
"Oh, didn't see the little pixie princess down there."
So much for respect. Still, I can't stop staring. Sinuous vines are tattooed on his golden skin, following the lines of his carved muscles. On one of his large, athletic shoulders, he has a tattoo of grapevines that sweep over his collarbone and chest. They wrap around a nautical star, a ship, and a swallow. I can't tear my gaze away. Apparently, all it takes for me to forget about how much I hate him is for him to take his shirt off. And he's watching me looking at him, and I cannot even begin to interpret his expression. The man is a cipher. Why did he answer the door half-dressed? Was it to show off?
"Come in."
He turns and pulls on a crisp white shirt. I realize my jaw is hanging slack and snap it shut. Mortified, I force my gaze away from his body. His room is nearly as stunning as he is. The space is ringed with towering, mullioned windows 20 feet high. A desk stands against them, set with plants, candles, and books. Mahogany bookshelves are stacked with gold-lettered spines. Of course he lives in a place like this. A place fit for a king.
"I thought we were going to the wardrobe person," I whisper.
Raphael's muscles look tense, his expression glacial.
"I'm one of the few people here who has lived in the Fey Realm. I know how they dress."
Serana looks at me strangely.
"Yes, it's a very important job. Mr. Lancelot will get you set up."
She leaves me alone with Raphael, and I survey the room again. His chamber windows overlook the entire city of Camelot to the north. From here, I can see a bridge beneath the tower connecting two buildings, as well as the monumental walls that enclose three sides of the city.
"Nice place you have here."
I turn back to him.
"It's not the sort of room trash would live in, is it?"
One black eyebrow raises.
"Listen, Pixie, I understand you think very highly of yourself, but we're not in the vineyards anymore, you know. You're at Avalon Tower, and I'm a knight of the Round Table."
My eyebrows shoot up. "Is that really a thing?"
"Yes, that's a thing. Don't get too comfortable here. We're going down one floor so you can try things on. I don't know if we have anything for someone so ridiculously short, but I'll see what I can find."
He reaches behind me to open the door, and I inhale a rich, earthy scent like wood-smoked barrels, a heady musk swirled with the whisper of fertile soil. Immediately, my mind flicks back to the sun-drenched vineyards in Bordeaux, the way the grapes looked in the morning sun, the things he'd told me about them, thirsty and aching for life. I feel nostalgic for something that was never real. Those holidays always have a dark undertone when I think about them now. I must have a strange look on my face, because Raphael pauses with his hand on the doorknob.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
You don't disguise your emotions well. Obviously something is wrong.
There's something intoxicating about him, and I scramble to think straight. Am I going to be alone with you, undressing?
He stares at me, and his expression betrays little emotion. What exactly are you worried that I'll do?
Nothing. I hate him, but he isn't creepy. It's more that the idea of being alone with him seems dangerous, and it makes my chest flush. And that's particularly confusing when I know that he thinks I'm trash. I don't think you'll do anything. Mostly I just think you're an emotionless robot.
A line forms between his brows. What the fuck is a robot?
I grow flustered. They no longer exist, and he never saw one in the Fey realm. It's like a person made from metal. They used to make them before the Fey invasion fried modern technology. I guess most of them didn't look like people. Some were like vacuum cleaners. I think we had one at home, a Roomba.
Silence stretches out between us.
Never mind. I take a long breath to steady myself and smooth my hair. You said we wouldn't be around each other, and here we are. My voice comes out sounding tinged with hysteria, and I wish I could rewind several minutes.
Perhaps I'm starting to regret bringing you on, Pixie,
he says softly.
He pulls open the door, and I follow behind him.
Ah, but you need a sentinel, I remind him. You need me.
And maybe, just maybe, I needed to get away from home as much as they needed me here.
Behind a curtain, I slip into a dress made of filmy scraps of silk. I feel like I need a PhD to figure out how to put it on. But eventually I reach a situation where my breasts are covered with crisscrossing swathes of fabric, my belly is exposed, and a skirt with a thigh-high slit sweeps down to the floor. It's a gorgeous lavender color, and the material is semi-transparent but thick enough around my breasts and hips to cover my nipples and underwear. It's pretty hot, to tell the truth. And if Serana and Tana were on the other side of that curtain, I'd have no problem at all strutting out, head held high. It's just that around Raphael, I feel acutely aware of every inch of my skin. I take a deep breath, steeling myself. Closing my eyes, I imagine that I'm fully clothed, and the cotton sleeves and long hems are my armor from his piercing gaze. I step out from behind the curtain, the cool castle air whispering over my bare skin. I might as well be naked. Raphael is sitting watching me, his body completely still. Honeyed light spills in from the tall windows, casting half of him in gold. And the large wooden chair, he almost looks like a king. He doesn't say a thing. He must be concentrating hard on the clothes because there is something intense in his gaze that I can't read. It's not the coldness he seems to reserve for me. On any other man, I'd assume it was desire. But on Raphael? Probably quiet loathing.
It fits well.
His voice sounds husky.
I got your size correct. But you look uncomfortable. The Fae don't walk around with their arms folded in front of their chests, grimacing.
I run my fingers over the delicate fabric. I don't usually wear anything like this.
Well, that's why you're here, to get used to it. Do you mind if I adjust the back a bit?
Do whatever. My voice comes out sharp and angry, but I lift my black hair to give him access. He stands behind me, tightening one of the straps.
You breathe with a slight wheeze.
His voice thrums over my bare shoulders. Asthma, I say. My inhaler is running low.
We'll get you a new one.
A little brush of his fingertips sends tingles over my skin, and my muscles tense at the sensation. Oddly, the wheeze in my lungs goes away, and my airways open up.
You're going to need to relax,
he says quietly. He steps in front of me again.
It fits perfectly. Your body looks as supple and relaxed as the stone walls behind you.
He cocks his head.
This will need a lot of work. The Fae will immediately identify you as a spy. So your job is to relax.
I clamp my hands on my hips. I'm fucking terrible at relaxing, especially when someone tells me to relax, and especially when that person is Raphael, the gorgeous man who once broke my heart.
You look like you hate everyone around you,
he adds. Oh, that's because I do.
He drops into the chair, appraising me with those piercing eyes. Okay, Pixie, close your eyes for a moment. Breathe in deeply and focus on your breath. Think of the place where you feel most comfortable, where you feel completely yourself. Somewhere in your home, maybe.
A place you would be right now if you could.
For a moment, my mind is blank. I've never felt comfortable at home. Home is a place of chaos. Home is a place where my mother screams at night. The bookstore, maybe. But then my mind blooms with maroon grapes, plump with sunlight. There was a time there, before it all turned sour, when that Bordeaux vineyard felt like a perfect golden idyll. With my eyes closed, I hear Raphael moving behind me again.
May I touch your shoulders? They're hunched up.
I nod. I feel his fingertips at the base of my throat, then the brush of his skin on my shoulders. Heat follows in the wake of his touch. He keeps his hands on my shoulders.
Your shoulders need to be down here, not up by your ears.
He touches the base of my spine.
Shift your hips forward. There. Fey women lead with their hips when they walk, chins held high.
Warmth is radiating off his body, and it's infinitely distracting. Maybe if I pretend he doesn't hate me, I can relax. I pretend he's Jules, the reasonably handsome waiter.
Good,
he murmurs.
Take deeper breaths. Feel your lungs. Then I want you to walk across the room. Fey movements are fluid, relaxed. Imagine that rivulets of water are flowing down your skin, dripping down the curves of your body.
My pulse is racing for reasons I really don't want to explore.
Walk across the room,
he commands me quietly,
toward the window.
As long as I'm not looking at him, I can relax a little more. I ease the muscles in my shoulders and picture water running down my body. Except as I walk, I'm picturing myself completely naked and Raphael's hand stroking up my spine. At the window, I turn back to him. My lips part and my cheeks flush, but I feel a magnetic pull toward him. I hate this man, but he's so goddamn seductive, and I might as well not lie to myself. When I'm only a few inches from him, I stop and look up at his face. This close, his silver eyes are hypnotic, so striking against the black eyelashes. Something about his expression is searing. Is that still loathing?
Good.
He licks his lips. Then, abruptly, he turns for me.
You've used up enough of my time. Pick out a few more things if you want, but I'll send the rest to your quarters. I have more pressing concerns.
My brow furrows. I don't need to try everything on? He's already at the door.
Go find Amon. He'll get you a room.
Raphael, as usual, cannot wait to get the hell away from me. The sound of the closing door echoes in the hallway. Chapter 10. I'm trying to follow Amon's directions to my room in Lothian Tower, but at this point, I'm too sleep-deprived and self-conscious in the transparent silver gown to function normally. As I clutch my new clothes, I'm pretty sure I've been going in circles. Where is the damn room? At last, my gaze lands on it. Number 333, a wooden door inset into an ornately carved stone arch. A brass lion juts from the door with a circular door knocker in its mouth. I knock twice. Moments later, the door swings open, and Serana beams at me. There you are! Light floods the room through tall, arched windows, illuminating three beds with headboards carved to look like interwoven vines. Round tables stand between the beds, and plants grow in pots on the large stone windowsills. This place looks amazing. Cozy and grandiose at the same time. It even has two sets of bookshelves that display old tomes and flickering candles in jars. Donna sits on one of the beds with a book in her lap. No classes today. We can rest, and I bloody well need it. On the table next to her is a gold-engraved black teapot and several matching cups. I turn to look at Serana's bed. On her side, the vibe is very different from Tana's tidy corner of the room. Serana's bed is chaos incarnate, the bedsheets tangled and knotted. Half a dozen outfits are discarded on and around the bed, and books litter the nightstand, stacked in a precarious tower. The hilt of a sword peeks from beneath her pillow. Yellow stains, which I can only hope are from tea, streak her duvet. Welcome to our room, she says. The three of us will be sharing. One of the books topples off her bedside table, and I rush over to catch it. I start stacking the books neatly, my eyes darting to the third bed. Mine, I presume. I'm so tired that it's drawing me closer like a magnetic pull. I hope you forgive me if I just sleep all day. I'll pour you some mugwort tea, says Tana. It will give you soothing dreams when you fall asleep. Serana cocks her head at me. What are you doing, love? I belatedly realize I was trying to untangle her sheets. Your bed looked uncomfortable? I'm a fucking mess,
She shrugs. I'm fine with it, though.
Right, of course. I pull the sheets over my bed, making it neatly. Once it's made, with the pillows piled up, I drop onto the mattress with a relieved sigh and accept a steaming cup of tea from Tana.
Ah, thank you.
I sit up, glancing at my roommates over the rim of my mug. It's an unusual feeling for me, being looked after, and it warms my chest, along with the tea. I take another long look at their room. No, our room. Over Tana's bedside table hangs a portrait of a man with a long white beard. He wears blue robes with silver crescent moons and a torque around his throat to match. He holds a gnarled wooden staff, and the gold placard beneath it reads Merlin. My breath catches. I still can't believe all this is real. A silver torque, I ask? Do you mean to tell me that Raphael has achieved a higher level than Merlin himself?
Ah, no, says Tana. Merlin wears Avalon steel. It's a special sort of metal made by dragonfire and cooled in the lake, granted to him by the Lady of the Lake when she was alive.
She grins.
He loves wearing it because Nimue made it for him. I mean, he loved wearing it, past tense. Only Merlin, Arthur, and some of the most powerful fae of Merlin's court had those. It doesn't exist anymore, because all the primal magic has gone from the world. Primal magic disappeared when the fae left for Broceliande.
When I look closer, I can see that the torque does have a warmer tone than silver, a rosy sheen. I need to let everyone at home know that I'm here, I say after a few seconds. Do either of you know how to get a letter quickly to the U.S.? Or is there a phone here?
No phones for us, Tana nods. I can help you with a letter. It's a very speedy service. But of course, you can't let them know you're here. No one can know Camelot exists. They'll vet all the letters.
I blink as it sinks in. Right. You'll need a cover story, says Serana. You fell in love and you're staying for your new fella, Raphael. She snorts. No, I'm only joking. He obviously hates you. I stare at her. You picked up on that? It's a bit obvious, darling. She shrugs. Well, he either hates you or wants to shag you, or both. But you cannot shag him. Absolutely not allowed at Avalon Tower.
Tarquin didn't seem to care about that rule, I say.
Oh, those rules don't apply to the god's chosen pendragons, of course. Just as common as, don't worry, there are plenty of options outside the tower. She shrugs. If you have the energy for that sort of thing.
I'll keep that in mind.
Is there a story between Raphael and you? She asks. Have you met him before? Nothing interesting, I mutter. Anyway, I'll just tell my mom I found work in an amazing bookstore. Whatever it takes.
Serana flicks her red hair behind her shoulder.
Are you still in training, Tana? I ask. I thought you were already an agent.
I'm back for more training, she says. I've been helping MI-13 for a while, mostly on boats, like the one where we met. But they want to send me into Fae France, so I need a whole bunch of new skills. I'll be in the fighting class and the spycraft classes.
My stomach tightens.
They won't expect me to go into Fae France, right?
I'll just help cruise across the Veil Barrier and stay on this side, I'm assuming. Tarquin was sort of right. I'm not at all prepared to be here.
Tarquin is a wanker, Serana says. You don't need life advice from him. Missions never go as planned. As a sentinel, you'll have to know how to react and improvise when the time comes.
And yes, that could be in Fae France, maybe even Broceliande.
Wanker, it's a funny word. Tana says dreamily.
Wanker. Say it enough times, it feels weird. Wanker. 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 Wanker.
Serana massages the bridge of her nose. Tana, I think you drank too much mugwort tea. Tana clutches her mug.
Wanker.
Were you ever there? I ask Serana.
Broceliande?
She shakes her head. I'm from the Isle of Man, but Tana comes from Broceliande.
Tana's eyes are drifting shut.
Did you know that in the ancient days, in the time of primal magic, when the Fae was still in Avalon, they would build a large wicker tower and put humans inside it and burn them, and they'd spill human blood to fertilize the soil where mistletoe grew? I wonder if they still do that.
Serana rolls her eyes. Tana, you're going to scare our new roommate. I'm desperate to sleep, but I have 2 days' worth of grime on me and my nails look filthy. Is there a bath somewhere? I ask.
Ah, we're lucky.
Serana grins. Tana was able to persuade them to give us a good room with our own bath. She points at a door just between the bookshelves. Right there. I sigh with relief. Thank you. I pull out some of the new clothes, a red dress with no sleeves, and head for the bathroom. I open the door to a narrow stone room.
Light streams in, forming diamond-shaped patterns on the flagstone floor. Candles and soap rest on wooden shelves, and burgundy towels are stacked neatly on a cushioned stool. A copper clawfoot tub stands on one side, and I turn on the tap. As the bath fills, steam curls into the air. I slip into the tub as the water rushes in, and my muscles start to relax. After the long journey here, this feels amazing. For the last 7 years, we've been in an apartment that has a bathroom down the hall, shared with strangers. It is a single shower stall that always has someone's hair in it. This is luxury. I scrub the grime and seawater off my body. I don't stay in the bath too long because I'm in danger of falling asleep. But as I step out and the water trickles down my bare skin, I hear Raphael's voice.
Imagine that rivulets of water flowing down your skin, dripping down the curves of your body.
I wonder if he remembers that he kissed me once, out there in the vineyards all those years ago. Or if he has any idea that the kiss ruined me, because I think nothing will ever top how it made me feel. I really need to stop thinking about him. I dry myself off aggressively, then I pull on the red dress. The material is exquisite and silky against my skin. I cross into the bedroom again and freeze. An unfamiliar man is sitting in the room, nestled next to Tana on her bed.
Oh, sorry,
he quickly apologizes. He has a wave of raven dark hair, brown skin, and large eyes. He wears a white frilly shirt with the buttons open and a top hat. Strings of silver necklaces gleam on his neck, and his eyes are lined with black eyeliner. He smiles at Tana and me.
You have a new roommate?
This is Nia, Tana says. She's joining the academy. Serana is carving a piece of wood with a sharp blade, and wood chips are scattering all over the floor in her bed. Just came in today, after single-handedly killing a sea serpent and smuggling an entire crowd of fugitives through the border. I huff a laugh. That's not even remotely true.
I'm Darius.
He waves. Nice to meet you. I'll get out in just a moment. I just came for a quick reading. Darius is addicted to Tana's readings, Serana explains. You know drug addicts. He's like that, but for cartomancy. He's here every night asking about love. Tana, where's my soulmate? Tana is the fella I met today, the one. Tana, does this devil on the card mean I stop following my old lovers through the streets of Camelot, or am I destined for a gorgeous bad boy?
I also ask about weightier subjects, not just my love life,
Darius snaps. I don't mind either way. Tana is shuffling her cards. But before we do your reading, I promised one for Nia. Darius scoots to the corner of the bed and gestures at me.
Ladies first.
It's not necessary, I say warily.
Oh, let her get on with it, Serana says. She won't stop harping about it.
I sit down between Darius and Tana, and she hands me the deck of cards. Shuffle and think of the future. I shuffle the cards, but thinking of the future seems impossible. I used to have everything planned years in advance, but now I have no idea what's happening. I finally hand the cards back to Tana, and she flips the first one. I peer down to see what it is, and a chill sweeps over my skin. I don't know a ton about tarot, but this one is obviously ominous. It looks like a tower struck by lightning with silhouettes of bodies falling from it. Flames rise from some of the windows, and dark storm clouds surround it.
The tower, she says.
Like Avalon Tower, I ask.
Perhaps. The card shouldn't be taken too literally.
She frowns and flips another card, which she places across it. This one was the lovers. A naked couple are in flagrante. I don't think the tarot cards in America are quite this racy. These two look to be on the verge, and I find myself staring a little too hard.
Huh, the lovers?
Tana sounds puzzled.
What? I never get the lovers,
Darius says.
Sona told me that you don't even have that card in your deck.
I was just trying to spare your feelings, hon.
Serana gives him a sympathetic smile. Tana runs her fingers on the card.
This one's both in the past and the future. A lover from the past. My chest flutters.
I've only had two real boyfriends, and they worked in the same bar. One of them was obsessed with getting women to do body shots off his abs, the other with his terrible glam rock band. I hope neither of them is in my future.
And the tower interjects in between, says Tana, putting them apart, drawing them together.
Pulling and pushing, huh?
Serana makes a really crude, unmistakable motion with her fingers.
Some good stuff, Nia. The readings here don't usually get that saucy.
You know, this should really be done in private,
Tana says sharply. Well, it's my room too. Serana sticks her tongue out. Just imagine I'm not even here, Darius says. I just want to see what happens.
She places the next card below the first two. It sends another chill over my skin. A man sitting on a throne decorated with large ram's horns, the general appearance of an evil god. The card reads, The Emperor.
Your parentage, she mutters. Something about it puts you in danger.
That one is easy. My mom. She has issues.
Mom has fallen asleep drunk on the sofa with a lit cigarette on many, many occasions. She once drove a car into a building when I was in the passenger seat. Nothing could be less surprising to me than the idea that she puts my life in danger on a regular basis.
Well, that's not your mother.
Tana jabs a finger at the card. I feel like the card reading isn't going to her liking.
My stomach tightens.
Mom raised me to believe Walter was my father, a boring, very human man with a large bank account. But obviously he wasn't. I had some questions to ask her, specifically what fae did she bang?
I don't think I know who my dad is, I say. But I suppose being demi-fae is what puts me in danger.
She flips over more cards. The moon, then death, a skeleton riding on a horse beneath a stormy sky. Lightning cracks the clouds above him. A shudder dances along my spine. Sometimes death isn't bad, right? In the tarot cards, it just means a change or something? I ask hopefully. But Tana seems like she can't even hear me anymore. She flips more cards, almost in a frenzy. More swords and blood, a card with coins, the Wheel of Fortune. Then she pauses, puts the deck aside, and takes a long breath.
Tana,
I swallow.
Am I going to die?
She raises her eyes and meets mine.
Yes.
I blanch. What?
We all die someday, but demi-fae live much longer than humans.
Right, but what did you see in the cards?
She shakes her head. Usually the cards are much clearer, but with you, there are so many forces involved that the future fractures. There are almost endless possibilities. I see duality. Struggles inside you and out in the world. Impossible decisions. And a lake. The lake.
A silence settles in the room.
You know, Serana finally says, normally when you get a new roommate, you should invite her to a party, not scare her half to death.
Oh, right.
Tana collects the cards miserably. She raises her eyes to me. Do you want to go to a party?
Not today, thanks.
Good.
She looks relieved.
I haven't been invited to any.
I was going to go next, Daria said. But with your current mood, you'll probably see only death, destruction, and plague in my future.
No, let's do your reading now, Tana says brightly. Your readings always make me feel better.
I get up from Tana's bed and lie down.